So you've built a new set.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah.
You proud of it?
Proud might even be an understatement. I think it looks pretty incredible.
This set would look great if we did a video stream of this podcast. Do we do a video stream of this podcast?
We don't currently.
No. Welcome to the brand new set of Envoy Recorded Radio.
We're here. We got heat and, well, it's almost AC season. We have a garage door that opens, which is really nice. Pollen gets in. We're home.
We're in the studio. Yes, we are.
Involuntary sponsor of the week.
So
I see what you did here.
Perry pointed out to me that when we were talking about the collapse in the business models of social media companies, that I gave you a pass when you referenced with passion your Pinterest page being drowning in unrecognizable ads. And so I just thought involuntary sponsor of the week is Pinterest for keeping you entertained on weekends. I think this led to the conversation that is when people see and hear you, they expect a hybrid of Don Cheadle and Snoop Dogg, and what they get is a hybrid of Brené Brown and Martha Stewart.
No.
So true.
In defense of Pinterest, in defense of Pinterest, you opened the episode talking about how we don't put a video stream out, and I think that's fair. I don't know that anybody would watch it. But if they did, I don't think anyone would be surprised as to who gets on Pinterest with some regularity and who somehow managed to spell Pinterest in our running show, and that's probably the extent of your experience with it. That's all.
So in the backdrop here, we have a 1950s Emerson Transistor 9 radio. We have the wit and wisdom of Winston Churchill alongside Matt Johnson's book. I'm not sure how Matt Johnson got up there. Above my head is a doll from Citizen M in Amsterdam that we felt looked like Vera. And you've tell us about this green picture
yeah,
frame.
Yeah, all right.
So, it's a picture frame with just green in the back of it.
So we had a green screen. We don't use the green screen, but we've always liked the idea of a green screen. And so I was comparing notes with a buddy of mine who also does a production regularly, and he's like, those picture frames are cool. You should put a green screen in it. So I can't take credit for the idea, especially if it doesn't work. Chase, this is your fault. But yeah, so he recommended maybe putting, so I cut the green screen up that we had just thrown away because we don't use it, and I cut a chunk out and put it in a picture frame, and I'm hoping that Lord Young on the production table might like put like an ERR, you know, like animated stinger or something over
into
our heads
the
into the green screen if we figure out how to do that. It'd be cool.
Magic. All right, what's going on this week? Over to the zeitgeist.
Let's talk about butt stuff.
Oh,
I mean,
sure, why not?
Well, colon cancer specifically. Apparently, the kids are getting colon cancer, and that's pretty not good. So, experts, doctors, the medical community has noticed an uptick in colorectal cancer diagnoses and early onset specifically, meaning that the demographic that is getting colon cancer is younger. Which means they're kind of out of the window where regular colon screenings would be required or at least recommended. So missing it, which means this demographic that's getting colon cancer early is also getting to an age when it finally is caught that it's more advanced. And so it's just this messy thing. And I think for the young people in one's life, get screened for colon cancer.
So you and I have the same doctor. So
we do, yeah.
Jeff Kashinka will shortly be recommending to you a colonoscopy based upon this. So top tips for when you go for a colonoscopy. As you get closer to my age, will appear on the horizon where Jeff's sitting there at his computer going, shall we? Oh, no, let's.
It's
so
time. It's the glove snap.
There are two ways to present this. So the hardest part with colonoscopy is actually the fasting. In the run-up to it.
Mm-hmm.
You have two ways to present this. One is to say you can't eat because you're heading for a colonoscopy, and that's a little socially awkward. People aren't sure how to handle that. Or you say, I'm trying to self-reflect and look deep inside myself, and people find that really great. Then don't say you're getting help to look deep inside yourself, because that also starts to get weird again. But, you know, how you position it is important.
Medical advice with Ace and Scott.
By the way, when you said we were going to talk about butt stuff, it reminded me that a neighbor to our studio the other day mentioned that the area around us, the people who live and work around here, think we're running a porn studio in here because we've built a big fence around it and people discreetly sort of pull in and pull out. And hey, maybe just say something about the type of people that are coming in and out
here. I was rearranging some gear.
Our neighborhood thinks we're running a porn studio.
I was rearranging gear last night and I had the garage door half open, and some people will walk down the alley and like the looks that I get when they see in here, and they're like, oh, it might actually be a porn studio. These are just regular couches, people. Just regular couches.
All right. Talking about pains in the ass, let's go to tax day in the United States. Tax season is here. That was a good segue, wasn't it?
That was brilliant. Hey, so once upon a time, it was after you and I met. Once upon a time, I built a tax company, and this is very much owning the fact that I think I failed finance the first time I took it. So I built a tax company for me because I'm shit at taxes, probably. But no, we built a company called Painless 1099. We basically digitized U.S. tax code for independent contractors, 1099 earners. We attached it to a bank account with a partner bank, and so we built a smart bank account that automated taxes, tax withholding, and then we partnered with Goldman Sachs for their retirement plan, MetLife, and a couple others to kind of aggregate benefits. So we called it our portable benefits package. But the tagline, the first tagline we had, was on the back of my business card. It just says, "Don't get fucked by taxes." And it was a polarizing tagline, as one would expect. But we had a big banner that we go to conferences, and at the top it would say, "Don't get fucked by taxes." But the U was like starred out. And 100 people would come to our booth. 99 of them would be like, "Yep, that's how I feel about that thing. That got me here. I get it." So speaking of pain in the ass. And one would be really upset and go like report it to the conference organizers. And then they'd come have a chat. And my argument was, well, 99 people felt that this was true. So I agree with you in pain in the ass. And I also realized that post Painless 1099, I no longer have anxiety and stress like this month. Which I used to.
Most people have anxiety because they have to do their taxes.
Yeah, I very little because A, I do my taxes very, I know how to do them very well. And also I don't have to deal with anybody else's.
So this may blow your mind, but that phrase of like, I have to do my taxes, mm-hmm. is not a phrase that is used in most Western countries, developed countries.
Are you going to tell me it's a privilege?
No, it's not. I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to say it's a ruse, in the sense that unless you're earning significant sums of money from investments, do you know what files your taxes? Don't tell anybody in America. Computers do it. Computers do it. They just know. They just know. Because guess what? They know what you're paid, because that runs through a digital payroll system. Yeah. You have a tax code, so you have a tax bracket, and it just takes it from your account. It's wild. And as a good example of like those industries that are protected, there's no reason that can't happen in the United States. Sure. Other than there is a $1 billion industry that is focused around you paying an advisor to file your taxes. Not to get tax advice, but to file your taxes. And it blows my mind that you never actually know how much tax you owe. It is a blind sort of, but you can go to jail if you pay the wrong amount.
And they know before you file how much you owe.
Oh, like, do they?
Yeah. They know how much you earned. It was all reported. Of course, there's like fringes of unreported stuff that you're supposed to put in. Half of the people actually report under the table payments, like the honest thing to do. Yeah.
Just be clear.
Yeah, nobody
does. That is worldwide. Yeah, and actually, there was something in the UK the other day about the right of builders to be paid in cash. Like, because they were like clamping down on this pushback. It's like, but everybody pays their builder in cash. Like,
you pay your construction guys in cash. I don't
that
know.
That is
how
the way that it's
one
done.
Pays a builder. Other you than don't, in
it's
cash.
Impossible to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Perry, who just gets large sums of cash handed to him.
Are we back talking about the porn studio again? What are you doing in here on weekends, Perry?
Perry's just
The DJing.
Yeah. Perry the entertainer. Builders and entertainers get paid in
he's
cash.
He's pushing buttons.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you're not the only one who is surprised. I love the backdrop of letters of note behind your head that people can't see.
Yeah.
Because there's an important letter from one Donald Rumsfeld. I don't know why he felt it was appropriate to write a letter. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I will read the first and maybe last paragraph of this letter that he sent to the Internal Revenue Service in 2014.
Wait, this is Don Rumsfeld, former Secretary of Defense, former Chief of Staff to the President. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he writes a letter. Dear Sir or Madame, I have sent in our federal tax income and our gift tax returns for 2013. As in prior years, it is important for you to know that I have absolutely no idea whether our tax returns and our tax payments are accurate. I say that despite the fact that I am a college graduate and I try hard to make sure our tax returns are accurate. He ends the letter. I do hope that at some point in my lifetime, and I am now in my 80s, so there are not many years left, the U.S. government will simplify the U.S. tax code so that those citizens who sincerely want to pay what they should are able to do it right and know that they have done it right. I should add that my wife of 59 years, also a college graduate, has signed our joint return, but she also knows that she does not have any idea whether or not our tax payments are accurate.
This is true.
Sincerely, Donald Rumsfeld.
This is a guy who spent huge chunks of his life in the White House and has no idea whether he's paying the right amount of tax or not.
Yeah. So in my limited defense of the IRS, this is actually...
It's not the IRS's fault.
Well, it's a congressional authority.
Yeah.
So the Congress has delegated the responsibility of administering tax laws, which is called the Internal Revenue Code, to the IRS. So the IRS administers the laws that Congress has passed on the tax front. So for all of our Congress people who I'm sure are experts in tax law who are deciding our taxes, it would be in all of our interests and probably benefit the country to just do it right and simplify the thing. Says Donald Rumsfeld and me.
I could go on a tax deferment and why I'm confused about that, but maybe we just don't bore people with that.
No.
We'll take that offline. All right.
What's next?
Okay. I mean, looking to the future, we may not clean up the tax code, but a bizarre story from the BBC a week ago, which was AI. We've talked a lot about AI, but talk about positive uses. AI photos that are showing people who are going to die shortly, scenes from their life that they would live later. So 10 people living with secondary breast cancer have worked with a photographer to make up the Gallery of Hope at London's Saatchi Gallery. And it is, for instance, showing these patients what it would look like to be at the graduation of their children as they got older, graduating from university, or the wedding of a couple that they won't get to see. And that's just... I don't really have a comment on it. I just thought it was interesting, incredible, maybe. So you get to see what it would be like if you were there in the future, knowing you won't get to see it. Mm. And then I got to thinking, well, could it generate imagery? Of course it can generate imagery of your, if you have a parent who's passed away at your wedding. Mm-hmm. That's in the past.
Yeah,
that you actually couldn't.
It could take that. It's fascinating that this is how we're using the technology. And not that we shouldn't. Like, I don't actually have, like, a strong... I think this is compelling for people who would want to see that and, like, heartbreaking for those who don't want to see it. So I think the choice is really interesting. It's what I posit is it's the speed at which we can do this that makes it compelling. Because, like, ostensibly, you could have a painter.
You could Photoshop.
You could have had a Photoshop or painter. Like, hundreds of years ago, a painter could have made this is you with gray hair and saggy skin, you know, 30 years down the road, and you're not going to live to be that old, right? Like, that could have been done, but I think the accessibility, and that seems to be the recurring theme throughout, insert democratization of X industry. It's always the accessibility that allows us to move faster and everybody to jump in the mix. We've seen it with music. We've seen it with production. We've seen it with video. We're seeing it with AI and image production. I'll be curious, not curious to see. I just think it's probably a thing that has been available to everyone, but is now super accessible, and whether or not we use it, like, so many interesting opportunities.
So I've thought of a new business for us.
No, I'm not doing it.
No. So if you can do that, then what you could also do, so imagine a dating app or an app, you're dating a person, right? You're in your 20s or your 30s. Let's do Jules with you. No. Oh, no, we could do this. So what the app does, it takes a photograph of the two of you together, and then it projects forward how Jules will look in her 50s based upon her life choices, and how you will look in your 50s based upon your life choices. And then she gets to decide if she sticks around or not. Imagine Jake, right? So Jake, Jake is Ace's former husband. He's now with somebody else. He's with Ali. But Jake is like that kind of good looking, drinking, smoking, or used to be. Right. And, but you'd see him and he's sort of like that kind of gorgeous bloke that everybody wants to be with. But then you project forward that well, thankfully for Ali, it was probably keeping him alive. But if you project forward, this is what he would be like. I mean, it's kind of like you do it with your investment fund, right? You model forward what it would look like.
So we're going to model forward whether I am a suitable spouse or not.
Not suitable, just pretty. But what I think it clears is when Jules says she loves you for your mind, but then looks at that photograph, it might call out whether she really does.
We'll find out very quickly. Again, speed and accessibility is what AI is doing for you. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't. Also, I'm a silver fox when I'm old, for sure. You see the grays coming in? That's we're already projecting what it'll look like.
All right. I don't have a segue for this. Reflecting the sun. Deflecting the sun. You wanted to talk about science-y stuff.
Did I want to do that?
No.
Or maybe scientists deflecting, yes. the silver lining stuff. Yeah. So... basically, scientists have been working on a product. It's basically a cannon that shoots salt aerosols into the atmosphere to reflect sunlight to combat global warming.
Nothing could possibly go wrong.
No, that's it. It's basically, you know, LeBron at the beginning of a game, how he puts a powder on his hands and like shoots it up into that, but for sun rays.
To try to reduce global warming.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is literally the beginning of that superhero movie where well-intentioned scientists release the monster into the thing. Ridiculous. All right, well, let's move on to barnacles in New York. So not barnacles from the sea, but NYPD are working, are trialing a new type of parking clamp. So, you know, like the clamps.
I read this as Barney's New York. I want you to know that. I was very excited. We're going to talk about loafers and Pinterest.
Back to Pinterest.
Okay, barnacles in New York.
So, Brené Brown and Martha Stewart, 50-50. So, the barnacle is, instead of a wheel clamp, which takes a long time to install, this thing goes across your windscreen. It's like a very large metal book. So it covers the driver's side of the windscreen, but it is battery powered and it generates energy to suction cups that means that it weighs the equivalent of, I think it's a 10,000 pounds of pressure. Going to be 10,000 pounds of pressure? A lot of pressure. The point is you can't get it off. So it's seen as like more efficient, a way to make people pay parking fines, et cetera, et cetera. And you can, you know, clamp down on illegal parking. But I'm just like, knowing New Yorkers, the joy that this is going to bring, watching that
driving
watching
around
that guy
with no windshield
for two things, right? Yeah, the guy from Staten Island who is just driving while, because it doesn't stop you driving the car, right? Oh, I can drive
just
with this
head
thing
out the window,
or just stood on the hood of their car on the bonnet trying to rip this thing off, certain that they can do it
with a crowbar.
I think this is worth it for entertainment value alone.
I'm here for it.
But I'm big on barnacles in New York.
Bullish on barnacles.
All right. And then let's jump to Australia. I'm sure many of us have seen the headlines of the stabbing in a shopping mall in Australia. Credit to the Australian police. They were asked, was this a woman-hating gesture in that of the victims, only one of the victims was a man, and this killer had walked past men before stabbing women, to which the Australian police said in Australian style, yeah, it is. Like, there wasn't, just there like, wasn't, yeah
like, sure it's not, we like, speculate, we don't know motive. They're just like, can I share a very American bias? And we talk often about owning one's bias. I will own mine for the sake of discussion. As I read this story, and like, this isn't to be trite, and it's not to like land a point that Americans are, well, I take this as you will for our international audience. My initial thought as I read this is, who the fuck stands around long enough to get stabbed? Right? Because like, my orientation is to guns here in this. And so it's like, a gun is so fast, and like, people understand that you can't get out of the way of a gun. And relatively, the shootings that occur here with regularity versus a stabbing, I'm like, how? And academically, I understand that, like, a guy pops up, he's dead. The guy who ran past us with a machete. Hell, I say this as someone who has been stabbed.
Say, so, yeah. So just let's just go through this. Like, yeah, I agree with you that that's the observation. So two observations. One was, a year or two ago in DC, we had a guy with a full-scale machete run by us on the street.
Yeah.
The second was, I was in a car. Oh, you weren't with me. I was with Jamie. Jamie has never forgotten this. I was in an Uber in the passenger seat. And she was in the back. We got out and she said, are you ready to kill him? And I was like, what? He's like, he had a knife down the side of, I didn't clock it at all. And she was like, what sort of a person are you? Like, that was sort of a Jamie Jones Miller judgment. But then if we were to, and don't raise your shirt, but if we were to raise your shirt, Ace, what would we see as scars on your stomach?
We would see what looks like a long C-section scar, because I got stabbed and my intestine got cut. Yeah.
Knives are wild. Knife crime in the UK is actually quite significant.
It's more the initial, the knee-jerk reaction when I read this is, oh my gosh. And then I sat back and I was like, I'm an idiot. Like, I understand exactly how that would happen. And so the like, it's not that because it is, because less guns elsewhere, more safety, theoretically and practically in reality, but also there's just a relativity between what I understand to be violence here and a random act of violence and what happens there. And it was wild that I sat with that for a second. I'm like, oh, huh. And so I thought it was,
but to your point about violence and homicide, so this is an article in the New York Times about the mass stabbing. Mm-hmm. So 18 people were killed in the event. So back to kind of what the news covers. So this is a killing in Australia, and 18 people were killed or injured. 18 people weren't killed. It was less than that. I can't see the number of the total. At the same time, local news was announcing a curfew of kids. So I had to tell my kids they can't go out past 11 o'clock because 4 people have been murdered in Richmond in the past month. 2 of them school students. And the mayor, LaVar, is like, look, these are fights with easy access to guns. Like, that's the assessment. This is high schoolers who get into fights, all the time, and easy access to firearms converts to this sort of... So I do think it's wild that US media will report on this because it's so exceptional.
Right.
Yet, I mean, I get why they don't report on it, because it's not news. It's not new.
No,
it is the background noise of our life.
Quite literally, I was on my front stoop and I heard a barrage of gunshots. And I looked up the police scanner, and one of the teens that led to this curfew, like, I heard those shots from the east end of my neighborhood. Yeah. It was just down below the hill. And like, we looked up. And Jules asked what it was, and I said it was fireworks. Yeah. And I heard my next door neighbor on the front stoop tell his partner that they were fireworks. And then I looked up the police scanner and they were not fireworks, but it was just background. And I went back to my life.
Yeah.
And that's wild. That is wild.
So anyway, just a final point on that. The one man who was killed was a security guard. So illustrating again, this was women hating. It was a security guard that was intervening.
Mm-hmm.
And just for all of you people who are down on immigrants, yeah, what a shocker. It was a Muslim immigrant who had arrived in Australia a year ago that gave his life in trying to protect Australians from an Australian, from a white male Australian. So, and then just, you know, if there's any form of justice, it was a woman police inspector who raced to the scene and shot him dead.
Who ended up...
And who is refusing to give media comment to. So just to her class act. All right, coming on to another Commonwealth country. We will explain what the Commonwealth is some other time. our elections around the world... I'm totally wrong. India left the Commonwealth, I think. Elections in India this week, elections started in India, will last for 6 weeks. The numbers are staggering. India has a population of 1.4 billion people, with almost a billion people who are eligible to vote. And you might say that doesn't seem like a high proportion. That also tells you how young the population is in India.
Yeah.
That half a billion or almost half a billion are not eligible to vote. Just a reminder, eligible voters in India is equivalent to the whole population of the United States, Brazil, Russia, Japan, the UK, France combined, and we're still 12 million short. So the BBC threw in Belgium to fill that gap. So voters, not population, eligible voters that will be voting have the right to vote over the next 6 weeks, the populations of the United States, Brazil, Russia, Japan, the UK, France, and of course Belgium combined. Absolutely mind-blowing. It's fantastic. It's
wild.
Yeah.
Should we go to Tank Radio?
Yeah.
Exo-atmospheric interception.
That is not something that's filmed in a porn studio on the south side of Richmond.
What does it mean?
I'll tell you what it is. Seriously, though, the pictures are incredible. So over the weekend, Iran fired 300, a combination of drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. So a cruise missile flies through the atmosphere. A ballistic missile, as the name suggests, you fire it up into the sky, and then it gravity powers itself down, right? So there's no engine attached to it. Well, it's not powered down. It comes through the sky. So it goes out of the atmosphere, right? Is Israel's interception system called Arrow 3, was intercepting ballistic missiles outside of the Earth's atmosphere. That is what an exo-atmospheric interception is. And they don't fire a warhead. They fire the missile. It's just the kinetic energy of the missile itself hitting the ballistic missile. I can't decide whether to say missile or missile, depending upon the audience, outside of the atmosphere. Yeah. But the next debate is, was this a huge success is the Israeli military and Israeli and American technology in defending Israel from this attack? Or was it actually, there's a discussion in the diplomatic community, was actually did Iran... So this was in response to Israel bombing the consulate, an Iranian consulate, as part of a targeted killing of what they claim is a leader of Hezbollah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was technically Iranian territory, right? Because it's a diplomatic compound.
Sure.
It breaks a lot of conventions around doing something like that. The Iranians saw that as the first move. This was their retaliation. 300 sounds a lot, but there is an argument that they kind of made it easy, that they needed to show a show of response, but that actually their goal was for them to be hit. And nobody really knows. But back to sort of the heat that is developing globally, it was the Israelis along with US fighter jets intercepting
UK.
US ships, and then contributions from the UK and France also intercepted drones and missiles that are coming up. And Jordan, sorry.
Mm-hmm. And Jordan so there are protecting its airspace.
All of those nations now have engaged directly in a kinetic engagement with Iran.
Yeah.
Like, and so now we see what the next step is, with a lot of pressure being put on the Israelis just to count that as a win. So back to our escalation path, mm-hmm. it's quite interesting that Iran sees the trigger being the embassy, the consulate attack by Israel. Israel sees that as in response to something. Then you have Iran's response. And then what European and the US are trying to say to Israel is count your defense as your win and don't move any further. Yeah. They're trying to reframe it. We'll see whether they're successful or not.
We'll see. And has pulled quite a bit of attention away from Gaza of late as well. And that's like a separate thing, but it's all interrelated.
Well, so it's been quite interesting on... It is said that the Iranians flagged pretty early that they were intending to do this. Again, this leans into like we needed to show like
we had to do something.
We seemed to do something,
but we couldn't start.
Which actually led to sort of various NATO members pre-positioning assets, sort of ready in response. Right. So we'll see. But at least in the UK and I think some other countries, there's been a lot of pressure to stop arms exports to Israel because mm-hmm. of the situation in Gaza. And UK officials were pretty sort of blasé about this pressure. And I wonder if they didn't know this. Mm-hmm. They already knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. Lord Cameron, the Foreign Secretary, was particularly blasé about it. And suddenly the pressure to stop arms exports has changed because they're now defensive rather than offensive. And that's the trouble with the weapons market. The arms market is, what are you using them for? And you're trying to trust the regime. The regime, the leadership, whatever. Did I call Netanyahu a regime? Oh, fuck it. Yeah. Netanyahu regime.
There we go.
I'm fine with that.
So we'll keep on just terrifying things out in...
is this the thing from Sandra that she just mentioned?
Exo-atmospheric interception is terrifying, as is LinkedIn. LinkedIn. Someone at SOCOM, this came from Sandra, who's on our team. Someone at SOCOM flagged that.
It's this study about
facial recognition. So there's a study that just came out. A facial recognition model is trained on standardized images and was able to generally predict the political party affiliation of faces, of real world images of politicians from. Looks like mostly Western countries, so US, UK, Canada. And the predictive power came from stable facial features. So what your face is.
Can I read from this study?
Yeah.
Carefully standardizes facial images of 591 participants were taken in the laboratory while controlling for self-presentation, facial expression, head orientation, and image quality. They were presented to human raters and a facial recognition algorithm. So this is humans can also do this as well as AI. And in terms of predictions of politics were as accurate as how well job interviews predict job success and how much alcohol drives aggressiveness. That it could be that accurate. The analysis of facial features associated with political orientation revealed that conservatives tend to have larger, lower faces. It's wild. So, you know, if you're working in campaigns, so you think about, you do the doorstop, right? You're knocking on doors trying to get people to vote for you. Do you instead go to a public domain and scan people's faces to estimate the likelihood that they lean one way or the other and then target them accordingly. You know, but if I was against this study, I've just looked at photographs of the authors, Mikhail Kaczynski and Poros Kambata. I just want to say, I think this is a liberal conspiracy. You know why?
They look liberal.
They got narrow chins, man. Oh, Yilan Wang. Sorry, Yilan. Yeah, he might be more centrist.
Yeah.
Now we're just judging chins.
There we go. You heard it here first. Are we doing a tool today? Do we have a tool?
Yeah, we do. And actually, as we're in the studio, Angela Prado is working on this right now.
Hi,
this
Ange.
May become a physical tool sooner than we might imagine. It is inspired. You know how much I hate golf?
I hate golf with a deep passion.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's why you've moved my putter from place to place.
I've been trying to get it out of the studio. Dick. Yeah. But you know what I think we should do one day? Is just find a field.
Yeah.
Pick up a stick and wear ridiculous clothes and just walk around it for a few hours with a drink and catch up with each other. I think it'd be great. We could just work out how much we saved by not playing golf. Anyway.
You mean we could be a Forest Hill dad?
You know what we
cut off cargo shorts chukkas walking through the woods with a beer in your Yeti?
I do that all the time.
You do this already.
We could also lie about our performance. It's also
yeah, we do that
okay,
already
but
too.
I'm going to borrow from golf. There's something that's brilliant. Augusta National, the course that hosts the US Masters, has consistently and refuses to change its rules, is that you cannot bring a phone anywhere near the golf course. They require that you will experience this competition in first person. It's not actually about recording it, because they broadcast it live. You know, they watch their stuff, right? It's that they want you to experience the golf, and they have like no nonsense about it. Same as sort of we're seeing comedians and musicians require people to put their phones away, and I'm a big fan. So tool for tools is to improve your communication. It's called a box. You find any old box, but we will shortly have them available on our website because we live in America and we're required to buy something new for any new idea. It's a box. You choose any box you want and you put it outside of your dining room or you put it outside of your meeting room and you pretend that you're working on super classified stuff, because you have to do this in a classified environment. You put your phones in the goddamn box before you walk into the room. And we do this thing called being present. And it's, you know, the scary thing for me when I do that, do you ever get phantom vibrations? Oh, Perry's not in here. Do you get phantom vibrations?
I don't think that means what you think it means.
Yeah. I hear it like in distance. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You imagine your phone is vibrating. You imagine your phone is ringing. So just put the phone in the box and just go be. Yeah.
So pretend your dining room is a skiff.
So for those who know, a skiff is a...
sensitive compartmented information facility.
It's the little bubble you climb into in an embassy or a secure location to actually talk, assuming that everything else is bugged or vulnerable. And assume your dining room is a skiff, leave the phones outside, put them in a box, and have that conversation. Also do it in your meeting rooms as well. If something justifies putting humans in a room together, it probably justifies them being present in that room. And if it's not something that people would willingly put their phone in a box for, then you probably shouldn't have that.
I think the music venue thing is interesting, particularly when you've got a bunch of people with their phones out and up and you're just trying to see. Like, I don't have that problem. I'm 6'4". But like for real people, you know, who don't get to breathe rarefied air down there you get my point. When phones are up, it impedes the view. And I think what's interesting, like, look, I'm guilty of it. I have taken photos or videos at shows. I have not looked at a single video I have taken, but I know I was not paying attention to the show while I was taking the video. I was paying attention to whether I was taking
the video.
I'm
pretty confident if you went to see a performer in person and you videoed part of that on your phone, and then a few weeks later you're saying, oh, I want to listen to that artist, what you would do is you'd say, no Spotify, no Apple Music.
The
no
27
chance.
Second snippet that I took, I'm not
going to tell
it.
Siri just to play it.
Yep.
I'm going to go dig through my photographs and find it. It's wild. Yeah. It's really interesting.
But we have to be forced to do it, or otherwise we won't. Right, like most people will still video.
There's a clip from, I really feel for performance on this. There's a clip from a concert of the 1976, I think it is.
1975?
That's what I mean.
There we go. You're close.
And did I say 76?
You did say 76. That's great. Great
year, I'm not allowed to like them. Because wasn't that like their lead singer? And like he broke up with Taylor or something.
Yeah, I don't remember what he did. Vera's probably going to yell at us about not knowing what Matty Healy did.
She's blushing just at the thought of him. Yeah. But they're calling out to the audience, like, please, just one song, just one track,
yep,
just everybody, and they didn't. And you could see like the genuine heartbreak on the band's eyes. Like, please just.
I mean, think about it though. What if Matty Healy, what if the 1975 plays a song and everybody puts their phone away and I'm the only one who recorded it? Then it's valuable.
Oh.
We should use AI to predict what Matty Healy is going to look like in 30 years.
Do you know,
and
do you know, what, you, do you know what you call that video? Like, if you were the only one that captured the 1975 when nobody else has their phone out, you know what you call it? The 1976.
Can we end the episode here? Are we done? God, that was awful. That was awful. Hey, can we go to a quick, not even a question, a comment from our enormous, enormous audience. Our friend Amy very, very, I think, astutely pointed out that we're having this conversation about whether people are traveling or not and where people are going. I mean, we shifted our capacity to not run an event space anymore and to focus more on being on the road. And the observation she made is that people are, it's not that we're competing with, it's not that we're debating whether in-person is better than virtual. Everybody agrees in-person. Most of us agree that in-person is better. You connect better, you get richness and context better in-person. But really the math we're doing, it's an opportunity cost equation. The math we're doing is virtual $1,000 or $1,500 or whatever it costs to fly somebody to a place, put them up in a hotel room for a couple of days of meetings. Is virtual that much worse than the cost or the expenditure requisite to send people to a place? And so like the debate that I keep hearing is whether or not it's good to be in person. And the real debate is, am I willing to spend $1,500 to do a thing that would have been less than ideal, but maybe still acceptable virtually? And I think if we reframe the conversation to, are we deciding to have a suboptimal meeting virtually? If we all say yes to that, I think it just lowers some of the frustration with it. This is like, hey, this is just going to suck a little bit, but at least we don't have to climb on a plane and spend a lot of money to get everybody to the same place. Like, I wish we could just like be a little more honest about that. I've probably bastardized Amy's observation on this, but that's mine as an extension.
Well, I think it's a little bit like delegation, isn't it? It's like, what is the price of the meeting? Is it the price? Is it the expenses to get people there? Is it their cost? You know, do you add in their cost of salary? I think that's as far as most people would go. I would argue that it's not, that's not the measure. It is the value to the business of those people doing the work. Mm-hmm. So it's the value that they generate, which actually suggests that in-person meetings should happen more often for the people who are most valuable to the organization. Yeah. Good luck with clarifying that. Or as your favorite British phrase is, the povos don't get to me in person and your bourgeois friends do.
You said it, not me. But I'm not disagreeing.
Hey, we got a letter from letter from Tim. He runs the School of Agriculture in South Carolina.
Yeah, TK.
So TK has it was a great note. Thank you, TK. But we have an open invitation if we want to go stay at the School of Agriculture. And I was just thinking we could replicate that golf thing. I bet they've got tons of land. We could just walk around in a field with ridiculous pants, lying to ourselves about our performance.
Can I get a cool hat?
Yeah.
I'm so down.
A tam o' shanter.
What they're called?
That's what they're called, yeah. Scottish hats. Tam o' shanters.
With the little tassel or like ball on the top?
Say it properly. Tam. T-A-M. O' shanter.
O' shanter.
Yeah.
Who's he?
I mean, he's a bloke in a pub. Sells you a cap.
Fair enough. To walk in a field with cool, funny pants on.
All right.
I think we're done here.
We'll be coming to you live from
the great state
of
Montana
next week.
Until then,
we're going to put you out of your misery.
I'm Ace Gallwood.
I'm Scott Wayne.
This was, maybe, kinda, on Voight Recorded Radio.